So the Dhamma for today is called the Appamadatana, or Appamadatanani, plural. Thana means basis, literally place, and Appamada is probably the most important word in the Buddha's teaching. It's the teaching that the Buddha taught at the very end of his life, that we should come to fulfillment or fulfill our religious practice through appamada. So in a conventional context, appamada means to be vigilant, to not be negligent. It comes from the root mud. Mud is in regards to being drunk or intoxicated. When you add pa, it gives a little bit of a different meaning, a stronger meaning actually, and I think the idea is, rather than relating to physical intoxication, it's mental intoxication. So physical intoxication is through alcohol or drugs. But mental intoxication refers to states of mind that are unclear, impure, muddled, confused, deluded. So when the Buddha talked about appamada, he meant it in a, it gives the sense of being sober, of being unintoxicated, having a mind that is pure, that is clear, act with a clear mind. But the connotations relate to being, especially in a conventional context, relate to being negligent, to being lazy, complacent, to not being on guard. This is pamada. So when the Buddha said appamada, he meant you should be on guard, you should be vigilant. We often translate appamada as something like vigilance, heedfulness, not non-negligence, the opposite of negligence. In a sense, this is where the word religion comes from, or not in a sense, in one derivation, the word religion, there was an old French word, religions, which is the opposite of negligence. So if pamada is translated as negligence, then we can translate appamada as religions, or religion. Because when we talk about religion, the word religion is often used sometimes used in a worldly sense to talk about taking something seriously. So someone can exercise religiously, can eat certain foods religiously, but not religiously in a religious sense. Religiously meaning it's something that they take seriously, even though they might not be a conventional religious person. So the idea here is to take things seriously. And there are four things that we should take seriously, that we should be careful and vigilant about. These four things are, we should be vigilant in regards to giving up kaya ducharita, bodily actions of misconduct, improper bodily conduct or bodily actions. And likewise, we should be vigilant about cultivating wholesome bodily conduct, actions of body. Number two, verbal acts of misconduct. We should be vigilant in giving them up and preventing them. And likewise, we should be vigilant in cultivating wholesome or right deeds, beneficial deeds of speech. Number three, mental acts of misconduct. We should be vigilant to give up and to prevent to prevent the arising of mental misconduct. And likewise, we should cultivate mental good conduct. And number four, we should be vigilant about wrong view, that we should give up wrong view and not cling to wrong view, not give rise to wrong view. And likewise, should be vigilant in the cultivation of right view. So each one has two sides. It's a simple teaching, but it provides a framework of right and wrong in four parts. So the idea behind being vigilant here is that each of these has the potential for causing suffering and stress for us and for others, but also has the potential to arise with us being unaware. It has the potential to arise when we're not paying close attention, or if we're not being mindful and vigilant. If we're not present with the mind, then any one of these three could arise. And so it's a reminder of where to put our attention in terms of preventing the arising of unwholesomeness and to cultivate wholesomeness. So in regards to the body, for someone who hasn't cultivated mindfulness or the Buddha's teaching, it's very easy for kaya duccarita, bodily misconduct, to arise. Killing, stealing, and cheating. Even drugs and alcohol can slip by for someone who has determined to not take drugs and alcohol. They can find themselves slipping into taking these things. I've had people talk to me about their inability to stay sober. And so the answer, of course, is they have to stay vigilant. Ordinary people have to stay vigilant. It's easy to kill if you see mosquitoes coming out of habit, and not just out of habit, but out of unwholesome mental qualities. The anger and the aversion, the disregard for the life of the other being can lead one quickly and unconsciously to kill, to steal, to do all sorts of unwholesome deeds with body. For people practicing meditation, it's not such a problem, though new meditators do often find themselves unconsciously engaging in unwholesomeness. Mostly it's more a refined sense of bodily misconduct, acting unthinkingly, moving quickly, moving unmindfully, using the body in a way that is cultivating greed, cultivating anger, cultivating delusion, eating quickly because of the taste, eating unmindfully, for example, walking unmindfully, boom, boom, walking quickly, showering, brushing your teeth, everything that we do can be called kaya duccarita. It wouldn't be given such a harsh name. We wouldn't say you're doing evil deeds with body just because you're walking quickly. But we could still say this is bodily deeds that are spurred on by greed or anger, delusion, walking quickly because you're worried you're going to be late, that sort of thing. So our mindfulness of the body has great purpose in keeping the body, our bodily actions, pure. It's not that the body itself becomes pure. In fact, there is no such thing as bodily misconduct, technically. It's the mind that spurs it on. But by watching the body, as we know from the Visuddhimagga, it reminds us, when you watch the body, you also see the mind. Watching the body, based on the Buddha's teaching, is a great way to understand, and not just understand, but to be vigilant about the mind. So by watching the way we walk, We can see when the mind gives rise to greed, wanting us to walk quickly, anger, delusion. And of course, when it leads us to do more coarsely evil deeds like killing, stealing, and so on. So we should be vigilant. Most importantly, we should be vigilant in regard as through being mindful. Our practice of mindfulness allows us to be vigilant, allows us to be present with all of our actions of body. And the same goes with speech. We might say it's relatively easy to keep the body in check, but speech is one level more difficult. Even a person who is dedicated to practicing meditation can still easily give rise to verbal acts of misconduct. Lying is the most obvious one, though meditators aren't that often guilty of conscious lies. There are other kinds of verbal misconduct, of course. A lot of our speech is spurred on by greed, anger, delusion. Delusion being the deepest, because even useless speech about things that is not meaningful, not helpful, or speech out of arrogance, conceit, delusion, worry, that sort of thing. All of these types of speech are technically improper. In fact, for most people, it's impossible to go a day without some sort of verbal misconduct on a subtle level. The coarse ones we should be concerned with are lying, harsh speech, gossiping speech, and useless speech. These are the four types of wrong speech. Mostly we focus on lying. We tell people lying is crossing a line. If a person is lying, they have broken the most very basic precepts of what it means to be a Buddhist. But each and every one of these is based on pamada, based on a state of mind that is impure, that is deluded. And so even in regards to thinking, it's imperative that we dedicate ourselves to mindfulness. We cultivate mindfulness even in regards to speech. Before we speak, we're mindful of our state of mind. Why are we speaking? The need to speak. And as we speak, we can speak mindfully. We can even be mindful of the physical activity of speech, the movement of our lips. We can feel the feeling of the lips moving. Even the sound of our own voice, we can hear it. And of course, the emotions that are involved, the greed related to speaking, the anger, the worry, the doubt, the arrogance, conceit, any of these things that might arise and spur us to speak in a way that is unwholesome. Of course, this can seem for a new meditator daunting. It can seem like a difficult task to actually be mindful while you're speaking. And for that reason, I think the best recommendation is to not speak too much. We see this in the Buddha's teaching. The Buddha said, you should either stay silent or speak about the Dhamma. Means relate something that you've learned rather than delving into useless speech or speculative speech or anything like that. So we're vigilant in regards to our speech, vigilant in regards to our actions, our speech, and finally vigilant in regards to the activity of the mind, because this is the root of all of the unwholesomeness. So even without speaking, even without acting, we can pay attention to what's happening in our mind. What's the state of our mind, even when we're sitting still, not speaking or acting? Looking at the greed in our minds when it arises, the anger in the mind when it arises. And we're vigilant in regards to the arising of unwholesomeness in the mind. Vigilant when we have lust or desire after something. Vigilant when we have anger, hatred towards someone, or aversion towards something. And vigilant in regards to our arrogance, conceit, worry, any kind of delusion that arises in the mind. What's happening in our mind in the present moment? We can be aware of this. We can be vigilant when they arise, the greed, the anger, the delusion. And be vigilant at every moment, because the mind is constantly active. There arise thoughts before there arise defilements. There will arise mental activity of thinking. And we can pay attention to that, any kind of liking or disliking that arises from it. And this is, of course, the most challenging and the most easy for us to slip up on. Every moment of our lives, there's the opportunity for the arising of greed, anger. Every waking moment, even in our sleep, during dreams, there can arise these unwholesome qualities. And so the Buddha taught us we should be vigilant in regards to the mind as well. The only way we can accomplish this is through mindfulness. And as we can see with all of these, the best way is through the practice of mindfulness. Keeping the body in check, keeping speech in check, and keeping the mind in check. It's only best accomplished through the practice of mindfulness. But all three of these become impossible to prevent, impossible to regulate, impossible to be vigilant towards without addressing the fourth base for appamada, which is wrong view and right view. And we should be vigilant in regards to preventing and abandoning wrong view, and vigilant in regards to cultivating right view. Okay, the point is, for a person who has wrong view, say, about whether killing is right or wrong, if a person has the view that killing is not a problem, it's very hard for them then, of course, to regulate any kaya ducharita, to prevent themselves from doing bad deeds of body. But on a deeper level and more subtle, if a person thinks there's nothing wrong with greed, nothing wrong with anger, or if they welcome these states, an uninstructed person in the world, we've all met these people, or perhaps been them ourselves, who think that greed is good, anger is good, pride, various types of conceit, worry. It's a common thing in society for people to think that worry is a beneficial thing. Parents worrying about their children, students worrying about exams, these sorts of things. If you didn't worry, how would you take it seriously? Not seeing the distinction. So our view is integral in our fundamental or foundational ability to actually address right and wrong. We have to first agree and understand and appreciate that what is wrong and what is right. And furthermore, we have to some extent, give up any kind of view, not distinguishing right view or wrong view, but we have to not rely on views, on beliefs, on ideas, and focus instead on facts and realities. So this relates most importantly to view of self. The Buddha was many times often talking about the importance of giving up view of self. And he doesn't seem to have been too keen on clinging or attaching or establishing the idea of no self, for example. It seems like this would be the right view, to say that there is no self, but as we can see, anyone who takes this view gets in a lot of trouble. When they start to believe, oh, the Buddha taught there is no self, they start to worry and wonder, and what... think, how is that possibly possible? An enlightened being doesn't hold the view, for example, that there is no self. They just don't hold views about self at all. The ideas of self don't arise. They see momentary experience as non-self, as anatta. And why this is so important and what this means is it relates to the existence of things. So when we talk about problems, when you look at an object of your desire, that concept, the idea of a person you desire, or a food perhaps that you desire, something, a possession, a phone maybe, a car, a house, even ideas like a life, a stable job or so on, all of these things are just ideas in your mind. And if your mind is in that mode, which relates to ideas about self, then you'll never be able to pay attention. Your mind will never focus on what's actually happening in the present moment. It won't be focused on the arising of seeing and hearing and smelling and tasting and feeling and thinking, because it's instead focused on ideas, on concepts. So an enlightened being doesn't need to have any view that this exists or that exists or so on. They have to instead focus on the experiences, and they will see what exists. They will see that actually the only thing that exists is momentary experiences, seeing arising and ceasing, hearing arising and ceasing. And there will not arise for them any sort of view about self or non-self or anything like that. They will simply see non-self for themselves. So the point is that views of self are a huge danger. When we get into the idea of believing in this is me, this is mine, this I am, without instruction or without appreciation for the true nature of reality as momentary experiences that are not self, then it's very hard for us to have true appamada, to really pay attention to our body, to our speech, to our minds, and to have the clarity of mind that frees us from greed, frees us from anger, frees us from delusion. So it's a good framework, first in two parts really. First of all, focusing on the three types of ducharita, misconduct. And it's a reminder that we have to, throughout our day, constantly be paying attention to the things that we do. Pay attention to the things that we say, and if we've said, to correct ourselves in the future, to have better behavior so that we don't speak in a way, and so on. And most importantly, the mind. We notice how we've given rise to greed or anger or delusion, and we work to change that, to change our habits and to cultivate purity of mind. And the other part, we pay attention to views. We try and notice when we are clinging to a view, we're using a view to inform our behavior, rather than simply learning from our experience and paying attention to ultimate reality, to the actual reality that's presenting itself in front of us. Anytime you rely on a view or a belief, it will distort or color your observation of your experiences. So part of this can be done through study. When we study and we learn the Buddha's teaching, then we're able to change our views. And part of it has to be done through actual practice. When we pay attention to reality, we'll see that it's actually quite simple. And a lot of the frameworks that we thought were in existence actually aren't in existence. And all that really exists is seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, thinking. And then we'll have what you might call right view. We'll see what is suffering, what is the cause of suffering, what is the cessation of suffering, and what is the path that leads to the cessation of suffering. In other words, we'll see all that's important, and we'll be able to practice in such a way as to free ourselves from suffering. So these are the four appamada tanani, the four bases for appamada that the Buddha taught. It's in the Chattukka Nipata of the Anguttara Nikaya, the Kesivagga, appamada sutta. And that's the Dhamma for today.